Dear Instructional Designer, Episode 44. Hey, everybody, and welcome back to Dear Instructional Designer, the show about the instructional design journey. I'm your host, Kristen Anthony. It's season 3 of Dear ID. This season, we're taking a good long look at design projects out there in the real world. Today, and for the next 4 episodes, I've actually got a real treat for you guys. I am on the line with Simon Date. Simon, you want to say hi?
Hi.
Hi, awesome. Simon actually works for King's College London, and he took me up on the crazy idea I pitched at the end of last season to really come on the show and talk about the instructional design experience in a more in-depth way. So I'm really, really excited to have him. Simon, to start off, why don't you tell us a little bit about your journey so far in instructional design and instructional development?
Sure. So I should probably start off by saying I'm actually a web developer rather than an instructional designer.
Awesome.
I guess I've always kind of been interested in education and technology. Both my parents were teachers, and that kind of led me to want to find tools. When I was at university for my final year project, I created this kind of, I guess it was like an LMS platform that has multiple choice questions. And this was like totally before I knew anything about, you know, the e-learning or instructional design community or like what these words even meant. I didn't know if it was even like a, you know, a way to make money or anything. Yeah, I created this thing. And when I was applying for a few jobs, I saw in Brighton, where I was studying, this company called Kineo. And I applied there and, you know, they were looking for developers and they were really interested in what I'd created and I was interested in education. So yeah, I got that job about a year and a half ago.
And what was it like working there? Like, I always feel like Kineo is like it's the sort of front of the field for us. Like, what was it like?
Yeah, I mean, it was a really cool company to work at. Like, awesome. There's so many people who are really talented. Yeah, it was a really great place to learn more.
Fantastic.
Yeah, and I mean, I was mostly working with Adapt there, which is, I mean, something we'll talk about in future episodes.
Yeah, yeah.
But I was really enjoying finding new ways to offer content. And it was really cool that I could use this platform that was really open. And yeah, it was a great opportunity to kind of further my skills. And I was actually quite interested in moving to London. And that kind of led me to apply for a job at King's College London. So at the time, on the Adapt forums have a job section. And I noticed that King's College London were looking for people with Adapt skills. And obviously, that was a great opportunity for me to move to London. And you know, further working with Adapt and do more cool stuff with it. So I applied for that job and I've been there for about 6 months since, working in quite a small team to, you know, create these both MOOCs and fully online university courses.
Okay, awesome. That's actually a great segue. So let's talk about MOOCs. What is it that King's College London is trying to do with MOOCs? I know that's like, it's a huge thing here in the US, like all of the big colleges are trying to do MOOCs, but what would you say sort of is their strategy and purpose for getting involved in that?
So we deliver all of our MOOCs on FutureLearn, which is probably the third biggest MOOC platform after edX and Coursera. It's big in Europe, but it's not as big in the States. And
yeah, I was just about to say, I don't think I've ever actually heard of that.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I think they are bigger than the other platforms here in the UK and maybe the rest of Europe. It's run by the Open University, which is a kind of government-funded scheme to get people back into education. So I think they've existed since like the 60s. And they obviously used to do distance learning with, you know, resources being mailed to people, but
okay.
I think they're obviously trying to digitize themselves. So they've launched FutureLearn and they've got lots of colleges in the UK to sign up. So, I mean, I think we're one of the main partners they have. We've created about 10 MOOCs, I think, on the platform. The most recent ones were a Shakespeare MOOC, Internet of Things, and Medicine's Adherence. But yeah, I think it's really growing in popularity. in the UK. The University of Oxford, obviously probably one of the biggest colleges in the world, has announced they're starting to create MOOCs. And I imagine every other university will follow quite soon.
So the way I've seen MOOCs is that they're generally considered, I don't know, I guess loss leaders, right? Like you don't make a ton of money on the MOOC. Would you say that that's accurate?
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, from what I've heard internally, we don't make any money. We're losing money, but the kind of reason for it is to encourage online learning or to, you know, just for marketing purposes, to promote the brand of the college. I mean, there's really high dropout rates, and even less the people that complete it actually spend money. So I think in some courses we have maybe like 50 people paying about £30. So that shows how profitable they can be.
Yeah.
Which isn't really great. Yeah.
You know, you said you work in a team with instructional designers and other sorts of people. Are you sort of working on trying to make the completion rate and the sort of verified certificate rate go up? Or are you guys just, let's put these out there?
I think the first thing we're looking at is the subject matter. Mm-hmm. Like there's a few subject matters which are a lot higher chance of things being bought for. So stuff like healthcare, digital skills, education, and business skills. Like these are all areas that you're a lot more likely to have someone pay money to show that they've been accredited. Mm-hmm. So I think from what I've understood, the MOOC model is kind of transforming more into accreditation for these kind of business-based skills rather than for personal learning, which I guess is a bit of a shame. But I mean, people, obviously they need to, you know, be profitable, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, what would you say with sort of your role and your team's role in developing that? Like, do you work with faculty to sort of develop it from beginning to end? How does that look?
Yeah, so our team is kind of an intermediary between the MOOC platform, FutureLearn, and the departments. Mm. So we do the kind of scoping. We have a team of instructional designers who know what they're doing and, you know, how to convert their knowledge into online learning. With MOOCs, you have a lot less freedom, I guess. Like you kind of have to adhere to the content guidelines the MOOC provider presents to you. And that's something we've had a bit of problems with sometimes, but I guess you have to respect the platform that you're working on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. So you guys have these MOOCs that you've worked on, and you said that the other thing you guys are doing is sort of full university program. So let's talk a little bit about that. What do those look like?
Yeah. So we currently do about 5 or 6 fully online master's courses. So I guess they're designed for people who are currently in work or, you know, currently in a settled location, and either they don't want to relocate to, you know, like say London to study, or because of their work timetable, they want to be able to study in, you know, their spare time rather than a fixed schedule, classroom schedule. So I guess the online model is offering something to these learners that didn't exist.
Mm-hmm. It's a full master's program. Like that sounds huge.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, like we have about 30 people on our team, about 20 instructional designers, and it's like a year long project that.
Wow.
Yeah. Creating, you know, scoping all these things, creating like hundreds of online objects for each, you know, for each thing. It's like the scale is ridiculous. Like, and obviously, you know, the learners are spending so much money. So we've got to create really good learning experience to justify their purchase, I guess.
Yeah. And would you say that you guys are, you know, you feel freer as far as sort of the range of learning objects that you create in these programs versus the MOOCs?
Yeah. I mean, we get to use whichever technology we want. So we mostly work with Adapt, as I mentioned previously. And it's quite strong for being able to create this high amount of content, because how the abstractation between content and theming allows someone who doesn't need to know about theming to not have to worry about it. This is quite a high level argument. I'm sorry.
No, that makes sense. So yeah. So you can go and do your web development thing over here and the IDs can go and work over there without you two getting in each other's way.
Yeah. So we have web designers who would work with a web developer, a CSS developer to create a theme. And then someone who knows how to code in JavaScript could create new plugins for the team. So it's like this huge ecosystem where people are like putting in different things all on this server that we control. So, you know, it's completely free.
And so I'm wondering, and I know, again, everybody, Simon's going to be with us for a little while, so that's awesome. But I know when I created or concentrated on really themes, it was because I was doing courses like death investigation or forensics, and I really wanted the theme to sort of evoke that idea. What would you say you guys are using sort of theming for in ADAPT? Like, what's the purpose of concentrating on that?
I mean, it is mostly like quite basic themes. Like, I guess we are mostly just kind of adding colors and maybe adding a few cool stylistic things, but
okay,
we try and art direct every course so that it's got like standardized theming and standardized colors and fonts, so that, you know, it makes it look like a more premium product. But I appreciate that we could be doing more stuff with theming, but I mean, everyone says that, right?
Right. My other question then would be, you said you guys are also creating sort of plugins, and if you can share, if you feel comfortable sharing, like what sorts of things are you guys doing with that to sort of add interactivity or add interest to the courses?
Yeah. So far, we've created plugins to support the third-party tools that we use. So we use Brightcove for video hosting. Mm. We use Google Analytics to track our learners. I guess because we have like an end-to-end from like creating to hosting the content, we have a lot more control over our learners, and we were hosting as well, so we can control that environment. And one of the plugins that we're creating is bringing the kind of LMS social features more into ADAPT. That's something that we're really interested in. So yeah, hopefully I'll be able to share that sometime soon.
Yeah. So you've got MOOCs and you've got full university programs. Based on your experience so far, which one are you working on more?
Our team probably spends 80% of the time on the master's courses. Like I said earlier, MOOCs are pretty much a loss leader. So
yeah,
it's quite hard to justify like a huge development on them. Mm. And I think our team is starting to look at that and realize we should only do MOOCs which have a good chance of making back their money, or alternatively, something good for the brand, the university brand. So there's multiple ways to value how a MOOC is a success. Mm. But ultimately, like it's still going to be quite hard to make it successful compared to the online programs, which, you know, the sky's the limit. Like there's millions of students in the world who could be looking for a postgraduate course. And, you know, we're not limited just by the UK. Anyone in the world can apply for these courses to study from their house, wherever they live.
Yeah. Do you guys find that you're getting a whole bunch of international students?
It depends from course to course. So we do English language course, which is like a blended course. So we have lots of international students who are studying in the, you know, studying in King's College come September. And traditionally, they would have to move to the UK 2 months earlier to do their ELC in like a classroom environment. But something we're starting this year is to have a blended learning where they start that course at home instead for the first 9 weeks. So they only have to come here 3 weeks before the start of term.
Nice. Okay. That makes a lot of sense. And so, Simon, we're wrapping up here, but before we go, I sort of want to ask just more generally about your experience as a web developer working at a university and working with instructional designers. I've talked to a few people who are sort of in my shoes. You know, we sort of learned to code. You know, we're probably not nearly as good as you are, but we're working that way. And we're sort of interested in combining, again, very much like you, in combining education and access with instructional design and with web development. Like, what would you say are sort of the prospects there, and what's the job like?
I mean, it's really cool. Like, a traditional software company would be mostly developers and testers, and it would be like a very specific stereotype of like, you know, a male developer, and I guess working in an office just of those kind of people would, I'd think, would get quite boring. So it's quite refreshing to be able to have different people of different backgrounds working on the same project, and they have a lot more experience in lots of things that I don't, and it's really refreshing to be able to talk to those people and ask their advice on certain things.
Nice. Yeah. So it's a more collaborative environment, you imagine.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And yeah. I really like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. 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 So going back to the university programs and to ADAPT and where this all started, you talked about that this is a sort of a big project, and you guys are using ADAPT versus other authoring tools. Tell us a little bit about what we're going to talk about next time.
Yeah, so there's lots of server-based tools that have become available in the last 3 or 4 years, and they enable these like collaborative teams to work together, and it does make you a lot more efficient, I guess, if you can like have people who are doing multiple roles all working on the same server. So we have like graphic artists who are uploading files. We have, you know, web developers who are creating themes, all these things. And we host it all ourselves. So we're really interested in how we can create more of this stuff. Like, I mean, just speed up the development process, because it is such a big task. Like, if we can create more efficiencies, you know, while still having a great, there's lots of benefits. It standardizes the course. It, you know, it's already a great output. Like, it works responsive. And if we have all these things on a single server, then we can control that environment and make sure that everything we create is, you know, good quality, whilst being able to create it very fast, because different people can access what they need to, you know, at any time, basically.
That sounds really cool. I think a lot of people are going to be very interested in thinking about ADAPT specifically, but also just generally about server-based tools, because I got to tell you, that's not really a workflow that I've thought about at all. So I'm very interested in hearing about that next time.
Yeah, look forward to enlightening you.
All right, awesome. So Simon, as we wrap up, tell people where they can hang out with you online.
Yeah, just follow me on Twitter at Simon Date. No spaces or anything. Yeah, our team's also got a few vacancies, actually. We've got 2 project manager roles and an instructional designer role. So if you follow us at Kings Online, we should have them advertised on there, so you can check them out.
That sounds awesome. Thank you again for sharing that. I know people are always looking for where can they work. So everybody, you have the opportunity to work with Simon. How cool would that be?
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show, and I will talk with you again next time.